We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal. The Solid
Verbal. Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrand, that guy over there. The incomparable Dan Rubenstein again. SolidVerbal.com is our website. Go on out to Verballers with an S.com if you want to learn more about our Patreon and get early access to not only this show, but all of the shows that we're doing this fall. You can also watch shows like this one live and live in color, as many are right now, on the Patreon feed. How are you, Dan? How you doing?
I am wonderful. I was trying to think of an S word to go in front of victory lap after my Saturday, but instead, I'm just going to go one at a time, other than, of course, that Baylor game, which we got into a heated discussion about. But right. I feel like I am built for chaotic, nonsensical times within this sport. That is what fuels me. That is what drives me, picking through the chaos, picking through the rubble of nonsense. And so I'm especially excited to dive into the week four recap that we have ahead. Come on, baby.
Yeah, there is definitely the feeling, the sense that we know Alabama and Georgia are probably, at least through 4 weeks, the two best teams in the country.
Yeah.
And then you could kind of make a case for like two dozen other teams to be number three.
And give me some more energy with that. Give me some more energy. You know that's a wonderful thing.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. Okay. I know, Bill, I'm trying to like ease my way
into this broadcast.
I'm building into it. But we know Bill Connolly's been trying to will the chaos scenario into existence. Mm-hmm. It's been a while, man. It's been a while since it felt like it could sort of go a number of different directions. So I am thrilled at this development, to say the absolute very least. Would you like to go through and do reverbs?
I would love to, Ty. I need that emotion. Give it to me.
Let's bring the emotion. 408 Verbal 1 was the phone number. We had people calling all into the hours of the night. Some calling while I was actually downloading the messages. And I thought about answering at about 12:30. I thought about it and just having a conversation, but I'm like, if I do this, I don't know what I'm going to say.
It's a weird precedent. Yeah.
It's a weird precedent to set. Anyway, at long last, here are your week four reverbs. Have a listen.
Hi, Dan. This afternoon, I, a rabid Oregon Ducks fan, get to marry the love of my life, who's a diehard USC Trojans alum. As two longtime listeners, we hope that you can bless this union of Pac-12 powers, and to my soon-to-be wife, Tara, because it's a special day and I love you. I'm not ready to give you back the California recruits back, but I do hope your coaching search goes well. Fight on and go Ducks.
Hey guys, it's Robert in Jackson, Wyoming.
Hi, Dan. It's Nathan from Gothenburg, Sweden.
Hey, it's Sean in Philadelphia.
Hey, this is Ryan calling from Oklahoma.
Hey, this is Bruce from Moose Lake, Minnesota. Just calling in. We just lost to the worst team in the country. Deer season right now, and I'm going to put on all my camo and hide from the world. God bless.
Now listen to this. Boise State's defensive tackles had more receiving touchdowns than the entire Utah State offense. Go Broncos.
No one, and I mean no one, just waltzes into the Carrier Dome on a Friday night. Sean Tucker, dude alert. Go Cues, baby.
Listen. It's not important that Mississippi State lost to LSU today. What is important is that Mississippi State now has a transitive win over Clemson. And that's a win in my book, Hail State.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Ty. This is Kevin from Washington, D.C. Watching my Georgia Bulldogs play Vandy. It's 35-0 in the first quarter. This doesn't even feel good anymore, man. Let the kids go home. This is just sad.
We are now 8.5 minutes into the game, and if my math is correct, Georgia is on pace to score 187 points today.
Hey, Dan. Hope that next pizza you make has a little bit of crow on top. Sick'em Bears.
Dan and Ty, it's Harrison in Iowa. I'm wondering if either of you has any eligibility left and could come play special teams for my Cyclones. Thanks.
Hey, Dan and Ty. This is Grant from Omaha. And oh, there's another terrible Iowa State special teams play.
Just wondering, Dan, how's that Iowa State lock coming? Sick'em Bears.
Just want to let you know that Auburn won very handily against Georgia State. There's nothing to see here. Definitely no quarterback controversy on the plane. But just anyways, no need to unpack this thing at all. Thanks.
Dabo Swinney. More like Dabo Sloppy. Wolf back in the house!
I'm a NC State grad. And a Notre Dame fan, and today has been all right. Words of a certain friend of the podcast.
Y'all, please do anything you can to hire Tony Elliott on solid verbal and get him off the Clemson staff.
Hi, is this the passing game helpline? Yeah, it's Michigan. We could really use your help.
The Wolverines did just enough today so we can keep a little bit of faith in them. But hey, gotta win your Rutgers clunkers, right? Go Blue.
The Nebraska loss is the equivalent of your neighbor's dog breaking into your home and eating your dinner right out of the crock pot.
I'm scared. Is it time to talk to my kids about an undefeated Michigan State?
Penn State, won, I guess?
I'm just happy to say Horns pulled out a 70-point win today. And I don't feel so bad about losing to Arkansas.
I know how to talk to my kids about an undefeated Iowa, but how do I talk to my kids about 30 to 50 feral hogs running through my yard? Woo pig suey.
From here on out, I will be calling Sam Pittman Big Sexy because he's the most beautiful and beloved man in the state of Arkansas. Woo pig.
Yeehaw! Y'all come on down to Jerry World now. We got pig hoes fit. We got pigs in a blanket. We got deep fried pig, we got sausage, we got bacon. It's going to be an Arkansas Razorback cookout.
Yeah, it's days like this which remind me why I don't gamble.
All righty, there you go. Yeah. A powerhouse set of reverbs. Those are the words of Dylan, our guy who puts them together. Not mine, but look, I could use many other superlatives, Dan, to define our reverb segment. It's so much fun every week. We appreciate everybody calling in. When you and I were on the Slack early this morning,
yeah,
you mentioned Stomach Bug Saturday. So we had labeled it Scratch and Sniff Saturday. For those who aren't familiar, we do this because ESPN likes to label Saturdays the deeper we get into the season. Show Me Saturday, Separation Saturday. We like to get a little bit more creative with it. Scratch and Sniff Saturday is what we settled on when we did the preview show. But in hindsight, we always like to kind of look back and see how close we were or weren't. Stomach Bug Saturday feels apropos, Dan.
Yeah, I just remember going away to a snow trip to Lake Tahoe, and the family I was with, the family of actually friend of the show, Illini fan Scott, everybody came down with the stomach bug. I don't know if everybody ate the same thing. I felt fine. Everybody was just in running in and out of the bathroom, and everybody just caught something. You know, I know it's a weird time to make contagious comparisons to things, but let me assure you, this was not flu-like symptoms. It was just a stomach bug. This was not something serious. And I guess in this scenario, in this analogy, I'm Oregon State. I don't even know. I don't know who I am right now. But everybody just seemed to be sort of, I can't get too far away from a bathroom in college football. Even in winning efforts, there were deep intestinal competitive concerns. And so I personally felt great about it, because a lot of both short-term, medium-term, and long-term viewpoints that I've held for some time seemed to really get underscored on Saturday. So selfishly, and I know I'm just going to be wrong about everything next week or the week after. That's how it works. Everything evens out. But it was entertaining, it was wild, and it was silly. It was a silly Saturday. So I'm quite excited to talk about it, both from a personal and just big picture point of view.
It really does feel like we are steering into a season that's going to get crazy.
Yeah.
There's going to be craziness that unfolds over the next, you know, 8-10 weeks or so. It's
how many teams does saying counterpoint, they might kind of suck, does that apply for? Does it apply to
pretty much everybody, Dan?
Yeah,
pretty much everybody outside Bama, probably outside Georgia. But chaos in this sport is when it's at its most interesting, and I think you can say that about a lot of teams. Again, I led with who's number three. I don't know. We can maybe talk about that, but there are plenty of teams now who I think have risen to the top of the standings. Some who aren't familiar with being there. Some who maybe are more familiar, but have serious flaws that have yet to be uncovered by the proper opponent. So we're going to get into all of that and much, much more. But we do have the full week four slate here in front of us. And let's start with the NC State game, Dan.
Yeah. On the first stop on the search for Snapple, who's number three? Remember when Snapple had that? We're number three. Yeah. So the first stop would be NC State Clemson, as Clemson tries to make that case valiantly.
Clemson, this game went to double overtime. NC State wins by a 27-21 score. They had a couple chances to win it, but their kicker couldn't stop missing field goals.
Correct.
But what a great win for NC State. You know, it's been a decade since they pulled off the win over Clemson last time. We got to go back to Tom O'Brien to find the last time that happened. We knew it was going to be tough for them to move the football against Clemson's defense. And it was. They stayed committed to the run, which if you went out on YouTube and watched the reaction video that we posted out there, I kind of commend them for sticking to it, even though it wasn't necessarily the most effective game plan. Mm-hmm. It did give enough of a balance that Devin Leary, it wasn't all on him, right? It was enough of a different look that he could kind of settle in and make big plays. And he looked really good. 4 touchdowns, no picks. You know, including a couple big throws down the stretch that ultimately propelled NC State to victory here. You know, where do you want to start here? Or do we want to talk about the Clemson offense? I don't really want to make this all about Clemson, because it was a big win for NC State. But I do feel a little bit like the national narrative will shift to, hey, what's wrong with Clemson?
Definitely. Yeah, I think we give NC State its due at the top. By the way, Devin Carter with that sensational catch
right.
at the end of that game that helped propel the win. Devin Leary was fine. I think the big stat is what you mentioned, that he didn't turn the ball over. He wasn't throwing the ball downfield all that accurately or all that often successfully. But the win was paced with defense and running and ball control and a lack of mistakes and taking advantage of Clemson's, I don't know what they're kind of going for on offense. You watch that offense, and Tony Elliott's been there forever. DJU has the experience. He's been there in that program for a year. You know, Justin Ross comes back. They've had receivers in this program. The offensive line is an experienced unit. It's like they all got together in the offseason and came to all of the wrong conclusions about where this offseason, like they all went away to a cabin and be like, all right, this is what we're doing. And it was just a nightmare plan, because I think schematically they don't seem to be all that creative. They're running DJU at key times. He looks off throwing the ball. The offensive line, I don't know. It just seems like a very average offensive line at best for a team that experienced and recruiting on the level that they do. So I imagine changes are going to be made, and there's probably a fascinating story to be written about what has happened these past couple of years at Clemson. But I just NC State at home, the ability to survive those field goal misses, especially at the end.
Brutal.
Didn't see that coming. That normally spells like, well, they had a shot, and Clemson's one of those teams that's just good enough to hang around and win a clunker like that. So, man, that really speaks to the depths to which Clemson's offense has fallen. But again, good for NC State for getting it done at the end. Huge.
Big deal for the Wolfpack. They finally get the monkey off their back. We'd be remiss if we did not mention some of the injuries that are mounting for Clemson as well.
Totally.
Will Shipley, their standout freshman running back who seemingly just stepped into that starting role as of like a week ago. I haven't seen the readout on him. It didn't look good on the replay. It looked like it's a knee injury, so he might be out for some time. Brian Brzee went down. James Skalski went down. That's on top of Tyler Davis, who was already down on the defensive line. And look, they've got talent. Ultimately, Clemson's still probably the top dog in the ACC.
But why? Why?
Who else is it going to be, Dan?
Georgia Tech. Right now, it is Georgia Tech.
Okay. Eventually, though, you're going to get
They just beat North Carolina. They almost beat Clemson. No, it's NC State. Yeah.
Eventually, you're going to get to the point with these injuries where you just don't have anyone to fill them in with. And
but Clemson's in that space where they have the guys. They are deeper than any team in the conference. So it's not fully an excuse relative to the rest of the conference.
It's being tested for sure at this early juncture after week four. It does feel like the ACC is wide open, though, and that's for the first time in a long time we can say that. I agree. The offensive identity for Clemson feels off. Look at the play calling in overtime. It was just whatever DJ can do, that's what we're going to do. That was pretty much it. That was the extent of the game plan. So they got a lot of figuring out to do here over the next couple weeks. But the ACC, watch this space, man. Watch Wake, watch NC State.
The Boston College.
Yeah, Boston College. Never know.
I saw Bill C mention SP Plus has the ACC as like his widest variance conference. Like it makes the least sense given the production and results thus far of any of the FBS conferences that he measures. So yeah, it makes full sense. And by the way, Clemson 2 of 12 on third and fourth downs. Not good enough.
Let's go out to your neck of the woods, Soldier Field in Chicagoland. 41-13 is your final. The Notre Dame Fighting Irish upend the Wisconsin Badgers, Dan. This was a close game most of the way. It was 13-10 with about 14 minutes left in the fourth quarter. But the ensuing kickoff is run back 96 yards from Chris Tyree, who Mama H, I was watching with her, immediately screams out because he's wearing number 25 like Rocket Ishmael. She immediately screams out, "That's like the Rocket. That's like the Rocket." We're jumping around. We're all excited. But that was the spark for this Notre Dame team. Now, they didn't necessarily do it with their offense. We can talk about that separately. But at least on special teams with that Tyree play and then defense, especially in the secondary, two pick sixes to close this game out to eventually widen that margin and I think make it look like a little bit more of a beating than it was. I will say this about Notre Dame, and then I'll shut up and let you talk for a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I know Wisconsin does not exactly have an electric offense.
You should be talking for a few minutes. This is your team and the game you picked completely incorrectly. You should talk it through.
I took the points. Excuse me. I took the points. I did think Wisconsin would win. But eventually this line ballooned up to 6.5, which was a lot. That felt like a lot. Wisconsin does not have an electric offense by any stretch. But even with that being said, this was a quantum leap forward for Notre Dame defensively because they've given up a ton of big plays this year. They've looked out of sync for a good chunk of the season. 5 turnovers for Graham Mertz. 4 picks, 1 fumble. Wisconsin held to 1 of 13 on third downs. They were just 18 of 41 passing. Again, I understand we're not talking about, you know, a Mike Leach offense here, which is just all gas, no brakes. But nonetheless, this was a big deal for Notre Dame, the fact that they were able to hold down Wisconsin in the manner that they could and did, and then get some points on defense. I was really feeling pretty good about this, knowing that they're going into a tougher part of their schedule with teams like Cincinnati. And
Mike Leach's offense, for the record, was not all that good yesterday. There were plenty of breaks within that offense to
Mike
be found.
Leach's Texas Tech offense.
Sure. Okay. Fair enough. Yeah, this is a game between two quarterbacks who are substandard. They are not quarterbacks capable of leading probably top 10 teams. I don't know if we've ever seen any evidence of Graham Mertz in that regard. I know Wisconsin's offense and philosophy in general was, you know, I saw Ari Wasserman tweeting about how, you know, Wisconsin seriously needs to look inward and, you know, this is their identity, whatever, but they're going to be games like this. And Paul Christ's record against the better teams Wisconsin has played these past few years.
Yeah.
Not only do they not win, they don't even cover. They've come up flat more and more, and I don't think they need to change anything dramatically. I just think it's possible, and it walks an awkward line that things need to be tweaked. The offensive line isn't where it was. Running back isn't where it was these past few, you know, decade, whatever you want to call it. I know they've had years where, you know, they didn't have Monty Ball, they didn't have, you know, Jonathan Taylor tailback, but I just don't think they have guys to mount a top 10 team. At least the offense is half of it. And similarly, it can be said of Notre Dame that, like, their offensive line has taken a significant step back from where it was these past few years. And, you know, making the change at offensive line coach, 2 years ago, has finally, you know, the evidence has mounted that this is not a cohesive unit. They're beat up. You know, quarterback recruiting has been okay, but if you're left with Jack Cohn trying to compete against Wisconsin and not, you know, just running for his life for a good chunk of this game, that these are teams that are not fielding top 10 caliber squads, and that's okay.
Cohn was fine. He was fine.
Saying he was running for his life.
He was fine in this game, and that wasn't his fault. He was fine in this game. He actually ended up getting hurt.
Yes.
And because Tyler Buckner had a hamstring injury, Drew Pine took over. And Drew Pine's a little undersized. He's like 5'11". He's from Connecticut. They talked about it on the broadcast. Dare I say a little bit of Baker Mayfield in him?
Dare I say the third string Notre Dame quarterback
a little
has
bit
some
of Baker
NFL
Mayfield
qualities
in him.
To him, sure.
A little bit of Baker Mayfield in him. He came in, he threw a touchdown. I thought looked pretty good. Gave them a little bit of a spark on offense. You know, Notre Dame's in a different spot, though, offensively than Wisconsin. I agree. Wisconsin doesn't have dudes. I don't know who's going to frighten me on the Wisconsin offense. Notre Dame has guys. They're trying to figure out how to use them, right? Kyren Williams and Chris Tyree can't run as well as they'd like because the offensive line is in shambles. Jack Cohn is not necessarily the guy that they want in there if they're going to have to throw the ball 50 times a game, but if he can develop some of those weapons outside of Michael Mayer, if Kevin Austin steps up, if Avery Davis continues his rise, if some of these other weapons that they have out wide continue to improve, the offense is in a much, much different place than Wisconsin. So I feel like on the whole, if they can figure out that line, they're going to be in a much, much better spot. Perhaps that's the most obvious statement in the world, but they need to get the line sorted out. Yep. And it seems like the skill talent is there. We'll have to wait and see what happens with Cohn. I don't think the injury is too severe. But if he can't go, maybe Buckner will be healthy next week. We see more of him or Drew Pine again, who, again, for his part, looked okay. They do have Cincinnati, though. And Cincinnati, I think, is a different breed of team. We'll talk about that on the Wednesday preview. On the Wisconsin side, they've got Michigan next week.
They do.
And we'll talk about Michigan in their game against Rutgers. But Wisconsin's in a spot here, man. They've got Michigan. They've got Iowa on the schedule later this year. If this is the version of the Badgers that we're going to get, don't count out Nebraska. Don't count out freaking Rutgers. Like,
yeah,
it just wasn't the kind of showing that you feel great about if you're a Wisconsin fan. And finally, Brian Kelly, by the way, the now winningest coach in Notre Dame football history.
I saw that.
Passed Newt Rockne with 106.
It should be mentioned, though, that Notre Dame was playing against one of probably the best 5 or 7 defenses in the country.
Sure.
It's a tall task to score a ton of points with, you know, sustained offensive drives or explosive plays on offense against Wisconsin's defense. Like, all credit should be given to Wisconsin's defense in terms of their own ability. Notre Dame's defense is a little bit more gettable. I think. You look at what, you know, Florida State was able to accomplish, even Toledo at times, Purdue. Like, there are teams that have moved the ball against this Notre Dame defense. And so,
it is gettable.
Yeah.
They have looked better for the last two games.
Totally.
There have been moments now where it seems like they're starting to put it together. And was impressed by the secondary. Again, Graham Mertz is not Joe Montana.
No.
But I thought the secondary played really, really well yesterday. And there aren't a whole lot of teams in the schedule that are going to be able to throw for 400 yards or 300 yards or even 200 yards against you. But it just to have that defense playing at a better level, I think, elevates the ceiling for this team in a wide open
By the way,
air.
How many teams, and both use Notre Dame, Wisconsin as an example, but across the country, and we can dip into this thought across the matchups that we're going to talk about, how many teams can in earnest say, our passing offense is surprisingly improved and decent? Like, how many, like Virginia, maybe? Texas? Oregon State?
Yeah.
Like, how many can Arkansas? Like, it's a real small smattering of teams who are hopeful for passing improvement and receivers stepping up and offensive lines protecting and quarterbacks becoming a little bit more fearless and accurate going downfield. I don't know. It feels like there are 4.5 teams who are surprisingly happy with their passing improvement, which is not as many as I had hoped there would be. So I think that's sort of a theme. Like, when you look across football, we can get into the Oklahoma game soon. We can get into all sorts of matchups. We're like, man, they just don't have it through the air, and we thought they'd at least be a little better. So that to me was definitely thematic of, you know, Auburn, you know, all these teams of week four.
Let's move over to the altar of Dan, if we could.
Please.
Let's take a bow.
I know you're going to talk Iowa State Baylor. Is that what we're doing?
No, we're going to talk about Arkansas and Texas A&M.
Yes.
What a win.
Yeah.
What a dub for the Hogs, man. One of the best freaking stories in college football right now. It keeps getting better every week. Happens every year where you got a couple teams that get off to a better start than you would expect. And then we're always in the tough spot of having to figure out, is this team actually good or is it fool's gold? I don't think Arkansas is fool's gold. I think it's real. I think this is a real thing. I don't know if they win the SEC, probably not, but like going from this place we were in the preseason where we're looking at Arkansas' schedule and we're saying, ooh, boy, they could get a lot better and still go 4-8 to now this spot where they're a fringe top 10 team, I'm assuming, in the next poll, whenever that comes out. They are 4-0. Got a monster game next week at Georgia, which is suddenly like one of the biggest games of the week. A&M, mind you, without its quarterback, but playing incredible defense all year long, they hadn't allowed more than 232 passing yards in either of their first three games. Arkansas had 229 at half.
Yeah. Right?
So this is an offense that's playing well with KJ Jefferson. It's a defense that I saw somebody jokingly, or maybe not so jokingly, compared them to the 85 Bears. Like, they're playing real well right now, Dan. This is a real freaking team.
It is a real team who held on in real impressive fashion. By the way, that's Kent State, Colorado, New Mexico. Those teams that Texas A&M held down those first few weeks. Just to be clear.
Right.
I was worried about A&M's offense and the ability to move the ball going against this Texas A&M defense just because of the skill level and talent that was brought back. I didn't necessarily see that first half coming offensively, and A&M and Mike Elko did a terrific job adjusting in the second half. They held them to what, 3 points?
Yeah.
In the second half. Now, KJ Jefferson goes down. Treylon Burks was allegedly beat up during the week, was in a walking boot, but he played and was an absolute dude. But he does end up leaving in that game. And outside of what, it was an Isaiah Spiller 67-yard run up the gut in the second half. It was in the second half, I believe. There were no touchdown drives. There was nothing in terms of sustained success on offense for Texas A&M. Granted, backup quarterback going against what we think and still believe to be a pretty dangerous defense in Arkansas, bringing in the transfers that they did, getting the linebacker play that they have. But Arkansas has now beaten Texas and Texas A&M. They are the kings of Texas. The Hogs are the kings of Texas.
Oh, yeah. They're going to love that in Texas, Dan.
The conversation now shifts to, I mean, you were talking about who's number three nationally. Who's number three in the SEC? Is it Arkansas or Texas? Excuse me, is it Arkansas or Florida?
Probably.
I mean, it's a conversation anyway. Which
what about
is a
Ole Miss?
Wild question. Okay, I think Arkansas has better wins and has
sure.
shown more to be, you know, Ole Miss had a bye this week and we'll certainly learn a lot more. I think they have Bama, right, next week.
Yep.
But that's to me the question is who has impressed you more thus far,
yeah.
Arkansas or Florida for that number three spot if you're going to pencil in Georgia at number two?
No, I mean, what Arkansas has done in year two, whatever year it is for Sam Pittman now, time yeah. flies, it's been remarkable. This mm-hmm. is a team that is playing really well as a team right now. On the A&M side, the offense is really just off.
Yeah.
It's not good. They're without Haynes King. We know about that. But
the line is beat up and not that good.
Yeah. They've got some real issues that they got to work out there. And, you know, it will not get easier going through an SEC schedule. It's clear that the season is not unfolding in the early going for A&M the way that they had hoped. But still have the defense, and I still
disagree.
Think,
Jimbo got $1.5 million extra dollars, so it unfolded the way he hoped.
It's fine for Jimbo. It's fine for Jimbo making $9 million a year, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are A&M fans, not going according to the plan. If you are Arkansas, I think you're thrilled that you're able to score 20 points on this defense because it's a really good defense. They're trying their best. They can't do everything for A&M. They need a little bit of offensive help.
Yeah, and fingers crossed, KJ Jefferson. I think it was his knee that he went to the injury tent with. And Malik Hornsby came in and made some plays. Just that Treylon Burks heals up, that you know these guys are able to get healthy as quickly as humanly possible, because what a time it must be to be a Hog. Wow.
Whew. Man, okay.
I tried to explain it to you.
I know.
I said, if you feel something in your loins, lean in. Now is the time for enthusiasm.
Yeah. Well, speaking of which, Dan, I made a pick in the Big 12 that I believe you told me that
totally.
I should, quote, have fun with, and I did.
Yeah. No, you nailed this. No, you know, it's sort of a blind squirrel kind of situation?
It might be. It could be a blind squirrel situation.
Yeah.
Let's go from the altar of Dan to high atop the totem of Ty. Because when we're up here, when we're up atop the totem, we can just sort of see the landscape.
Yeah.
It's like those climbing pictures that Chris Fowler posts on Instagram. When I'm up here, I'm in my happy place. I can see the college football world for what it is.
Uh-huh.
And I identified a matchup here. Went against the grain of the mainstream, lamestream media and decided I was going to go Baylor moneyline, and I got damn lucky.
Home dog.
Yeah.
Home dog Dan rubbed off, I guess.
It must have. I don't know. I would characterize this win as an opportunistic win for Baylor because there were no stats that popped here, but it sort of had the notes of, let's say, a Michigan State, Michigan State win, in that it was good team football. Too many penalties in the game. They got to clean that up.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they cleaned it up after week one. I guess not. But otherwise, we talk a lot on this show about moments, how you got to win moments. That's how you win football games. And Baylor did that. They did that, especially on special teams by Tristan Ebner in the second half. He ran back a kick. He had a long punt return that set up what amounted to a really big field goal.
Yeah.
To give them enough separation in order to win this game. But I thought across the board, like, just they did enough as a team to get over the hump here against Iowa State. Gary Bohannon was good. He was efficient. He accounted for three touchdowns in the first half. Outside of a fumble to open up the second half, he just thought he was really solid. The defense was good enough. Brees Hall went off, had a 190 on the ground, two touchdowns. But the defense held its own, did what it needed to do. And Iowa State damn near came back in the second half. This was one of those games that if you're Baylor, it tests your mettle. Like, what are you made of to hold off a team like an Iowa State that we knew was not going to go down quietly, but then the special teams plays jumped out. Again, the two kick returns, though. The one off the kickoff, the other off the punt. Iowa State eventually comes back to within a two-point conversion, but Brock Purdy fumbles the snap and then throws an interception, which is about par for the course this year for Purdy. So we are now in a spot, Dan, where Iowa State has two losses, Baylor has none. And suddenly, I didn't even have it on my sheet for week five, but Baylor on the road against Oklahoma State next week's a pretty damn big matchup.
It is indeed. I'm just picturing you ahead of making that Baylor pick, pouring over like practice special teams footage that you acquired from like cherry picker film, just back and forth, and just like, they're not staying in their lanes. They're not staying in their lanes. Staying in their lanes. I got a role here with Baylor. Like you're, I don't remember the name of the guy from The Big Short as he's pouring over like the housing. He was like, something's not adding up. Something's not adding up. I'm going to keep betting against Iowa State. Yeah, it's just, it's tough for Iowa State. We talked about this in our preseason Big 12 preview, and it sort of came to pass as well. Like, they're trying to win with tight ends and a running back, and that's awesome when it works. If you have that combination of defensive playmakers, a running back in Breece Hall who you can build an offense around, and two really terrific tight ends, it's great. But at a certain point, a defense is going to say, so no receivers are dangerous here. So we shouldn't be like Tariq Milton, Xavier Hutchinson. Like we shouldn't be all that terrified of them to keep safeties back. And eventually you need that to score 35 points. You just do. And for Baylor to get the special teams plays that they did was awesome for the Bears. Get your wins however you freaking can. And Baylor did at home against, I still believe to be like a top 20 quality Iowa State team. So great win. And I don't know who's running the Iowa State special teams. I don't know if it's like a part-time guy who runs a sandwich shop 5 days a week.
He manages like, a Sbarro. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know who's doing it. I don't know what those film sessions are looking like, but let's fill some lanes and make some tackles on coverage. Let's do that.
Well, look, I'm not totally sold on Baylor as fixing all of their issues and emerging from the pandemic cloud as one of the contenders now in the Big 12. I'm not going to go that far. This is a nice win for them. They played, again, good team football to do what they had to do to get the dub. Probably a little closer down the stretch than they would have liked given the way that they started this football game. But that aside, huge win. They've got a big game next week against Oklahoma State. I will be very curious to see what that point spread is because this strikes me as a kind of game that is ripe for a hangover. Ripe for a hangover, and you go Oklahoma State. Especially since OK State looked pretty damn good in their own right.
And they could probably beat Baylor again, not scoring in the second half, which they haven't done now for two straight weeks. Sorry, I'm still on the Iowa State special teams coach. Now I'm picturing Matt Campbell's sister convincing him to hire her husband because he needs an activity to get out of the house.
Right.
Like, just let him coach special teams. Let Frank coach special teams. What could go wrong? And here we are. Yeah.
Baylor wins by a 31-29 score. Again, that came down to the final two-point conversion.
Yeah.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Oklahoma. Oh, boy. Oklahoma 16, West Virginia 13. Oklahoma needed a 30-yard field goal at the gun to win this game. Also, that kick was the very first time all game that they grabbed the lead. So they were either trailing or tied the entire duration of this football game until that last kick. So First off, credit where it's due. West Virginia played a great game. The defense is now, hear me out. Hear me out. The defense, I think we would agree, is legit. It's a good defense.
They seemed good. Yeah, they definitely did seem good.
They seemed good. So the defense, if all you have is a defense that seems good, that'll get you places in 2021. With what we're seeing.
Against Oklahoma, yeah.
Against Oklahoma in particular. Yeah. You can work with that. So I think West Virginia's a very good defense. It's a 2-2 team that could have won this game, frankly, if they got one or two more opportunities to go their way. They were really out there. The rest of the schedule is going to be difficult. I still cannot pave an obvious path to getting to six wins, but this was a promising road performance against what we thought was going to be an electric offense. That being said, Daniel.
Yeah.
We are now through the month of September. We're 4 weeks into the year, and three of Oklahoma's four wins have been particularly ugly on offense.
Right.
West Virginia very much followed the blueprint that we saw last week from Nebraska in that they just try to bottle up the big plays. Don't let Oklahoma blow the lid off you. Allow some underneath stuff. Sure, give them a couple chunk plays here and there, but just don't let any of the big stuff kill you. And that's what they did. It worked to great avail. 313 total yards for Oklahoma, which feels ridiculous that it would be that low. For a lot of teams, that's fine, but not for Oklahoma. So have we now arrived at the point where we are confident in saying that, yeah, something's wrong with this Oklahoma offense?
Yeah, of course. And it's probably the line. I mean, the time Spencer Rattler had seemed different than usual for what we're used to with Oklahoma. I think what it also just highlights is the fact that you can't skate by, at least in 2021, with what you were and what your perceptions were and what you used to have and be able to do. Like, we want to keep believing, and we probably still, at least some of us in Clemson and Oklahoma and teams like that, in Notre Dame and Wisconsin, whatever, just because we're used to a certain, like, a bar of success that they don't go under, where it's very difficult to see anything resembling what we're used to with Oklahoma in terms of separating from the rest of the conference when they're getting beat up front consistently. Now, I don't think this was a fun game for West Virginia fans. They're getting all too used to seeing a team that is sort of a 17-point team, plus or minus a few, right? Like, in against some of the weaker teams, they'll score 20 to 24. Against some of the stronger teams, they'll score, you know, 10 to 18. Like, I don't know if it's Jarrett Dagey thing. I don't know if it's an offensive line thing. Whatever it is, like, they don't have playmakers. They don't have the creativity right now where they should. They've proven an ability to recruit those guys. It had to have been torturous as a West Virginia fan, knowing that an upset on the road in the most difficult place to play in the conference was within your grasp. And there was just mistakes. There was just constant mistakes and an inability to stretch an Oklahoma defense out at least a little bit. I know they brought in Garrett Green, the backup quarterback. He made a couple of throws, but nothing crazy. There's just, West Virginia is searching, and it's very strange that it's offense, right? Like, West Virginia can't have nice things on both sides at the same time. And so I feel for Mountaineer fans, because the game was certainly theirs. It was a weird situation. It was Herb Street and Fowler calling this game, right?
Yep.
They were in Chicago for game day, but then went down to Norman, and they had to defend Spencer Rattler because, you know, the student section was calling for Caleb Williams, the true freshman. Like, it just, there's an underlying mess in Oklahoma right now. And look, they're winning their clunkers for now.
Too many clunkers.
It feels like an LRO team that they're just going to lose something real dumb. I was going to say it's not dumb to lose to Kansas State. That's just what they do now. But something like that.
I thought the Sooner defense played pretty well for its part.
Totally.
And on the Spencer Rattler thing, getting booed by your own student section is not a great look.
No.
He threw a pick.
He didn't look that good.
He threw a pick late in the second quarter. And then the student section started booing and they chanted, "We want Caleb. We want Caleb Williams," their five-star freshman quarterback. Holly Rowe, I don't know if you saw the post game. Holly Rowe asked him about it. And he said, quote, "I don't care. We don't care. It doesn't matter. We're out here to win a game and they're in the stands." I think if you read that on paper, it's like, okay, that's fine. I saw the interview. It clearly pissed him off.
Yeah, of course.
It clearly pissed him off. Yeah, and I'm not holding that against him, but
yeah.
Do not read that comment and say to yourself, oh, he took it in stride. He did not take it in stride. It pissed him off, and I'm curious to see if it lights a fire under the Oklahoma offense, right? A big night game at home, West Virginia, you win by 3. Oklahoma's got the full season in front of it. They really do. If they get their act together, if they play like I think we all expect them to play, they're going to be fine. They're going to be just fine. But maybe this is the moment. Maybe this is the thing that kind of propels them now to greater things. Who knows?
I know this is like first world rich people problems in terms of college football fandom, but it is tricky when you're positive that your team is somewhere between really, really good and great. And you have to accept that your team is merely good, right? That you're rooting for a team that generally has its act together, but what you're used to and what's reasonable to expect is more. And you have to say, I have to be okay that we're a B+. And I'm experiencing that emotion with Oregon. We'll get to that later. And I'm sure on some level you're experiencing that with Notre Dame. Notre Dame's a good team. They're not really, really good. They're not great. And that's like, it's just a weird place. And I'm sure 115 fan bases are like, enough. We have a quarterback who's throwing it the wrong way. But I'm just saying, this is like Minnesota fans are like, no, seriously, go on. No, how hard it is to root for a team who's only good after they lost a 31-point favorited game against Bowling Green. That's just the reality for a team like Oklahoma right now. That's all I'm saying.
All right. Elsewhere in the Big 12, the Iron Skillet goes to SMU. With a fun win here. It was the 100th meeting between these two teams. 76 points, over 1,000 total yards. SMU is good, man. They're good.
I think.
Yeah, I do. Tanner Mordecai had 4 more touchdowns. He leads the nation. Now has 21 of them on the year. Ulysses Bentley, the 4th, my favorite name in college football, at .153 and a touchdown. And TCU's defense just like wasn't good. They allowed SMU to go 8 of 12 on third downs. I know you want to talk a little bit about Max Duggan and how you don't think he's good. We can get there, but I just wanted to use this platform to say that SMU deserves to be ranked. They have looked really, really good.
It's not that I don't think Max Duggan is good, because at times he is good, but TCU and Max Duggan as a 3 or 4 year starter at quarterback, it's just like, you know what you're going to get, right? You know exactly what a Max Duggan and this offense, and like Zach Evans is a spark at running back who they sort of went away from at times. It was a much better first half than second half. The striking thing about TCU, especially considering who they've developed to become NFL players, is that they're beaten at the line of scrimmage so consistently by SMU, by everyone, not everyone, but a lot of teams. Now that's where they had really developed guys, and that's where they can't sustain drives. And I thought, you know, SMU and what it was, Mordecai threw, did he throw 2 picks, 3 picks?
Yeah, 3 in this game, yeah.
To not come away with a win. So the final tally was, you know, TCU wins I'm looking right now, 3 turnovers to 1. So if you're losing that game, if you're giving up 42 points with 3 takeaways, something is both very right and wrong with your defense. It just, it's an all over situation. And like, I guess, again, credit to SMU, but it was just sort of taking advantage of fits and starts from TCU on both sides of the ball. So great for the Skillet, great for Ulysses Bentley running all over. It was Bentley and somebody else ran really well for SMU. I saw that in the sort of extended highlights I watched. But TCU is not in a great place right now.
No.
Like, this is a program that needs, I'm not going to say that they need to go in a new direction at head coach, or like, it's just something new. Absolutely, just like something, like they need to hit the reboot button somewhere.
There is a Wisconsin quality to TCU in that it feels like the same team every year.
Mm-hmm.
The names change, some of the speculation about who will be good versus who won't be good changes, but it's the same team year in and year out, and that's really frustrating as a fan. Really frustrating to deal with that.
That said, the best of TCU moving forward, okay? So they have Texas. That's going to be tough. At Texas Tech, at Oklahoma, West Virginia, at Kansas State with God knows who at quarterback, Baylor, at Oklahoma. Like, there's nobody who are like, well, they're not good enough to win that game.
I know.
They're good enough to win 80, 90% of those games, right? All but, you know, maybe Texas, and who even knows? I think Texas is a little overrated at the moment. But TCU is good enough. The problem is that's kind of meaningless.
Texas won 70-35 over Texas Tech, and we had Oklahoma State winning 31-20 over K-State. Let's just go through them real quickly. The Texas game escalated very quickly. Definitely did not expect this type of domination by the Texas offensive line. They looked really good up front and just pushed Tech off the ball. You do that, it springs Bijan Robinson loose. It obviously gives a lot more clearance for a guy like a Casey Thompson. Even Roshan Johnson got in on the action. 70 points is definitely the kind of neck crack that I think Texas fans were after.
Totally. Yeah, it was really encouraging from the Texas offense, especially after the lows that they plummeted to against Arkansas with Hudson Card. They make the change to Casey Thompson. He looks much more comfortable. He's throwing the ball on time. You know, Xavier Worthy looks like he's going to be extremely
fun.
Yeah,
welcome
for
to college
Texas.
Football. He looked good.
Yeah, he had committed to Michigan and then left during spring. I don't know if it was an academic thing. I know Giles Jackson, who was at Michigan, was part of his recruitment because he's from California. I don't know if that played an issue with it when he transferred to Washington. But either way, ends up at Texas, a team that desperate for a game changer at receiver. And as you mentioned, the line was great. Casey Thompson, Bijan Robinson is, you know, probably due to be retired as a dude. He's just every week.
Yeah.
The worrisome thing to me with Texas is what they look like on the back end of their defense. I don't know which quarterbacks are good enough and consistent enough to take advantage.
Well, Henry Columbine came in.
But if you are good enough,
Henry Columbine
came in. Right, the
backup
to Tyler Shuck, yeah.
And he was able to take the top off the Texas defense a bit. So,
yeah.
You know, we talk a lot about the schematics of defending Oklahoma. They're going to play in 2 weeks. Oklahoma is capable of taking the top off the defense. Whether or not we know who their go-to guys are out wide or not. Well, again, this is how Nebraska, this is how West Virginia has stopped Oklahoma.
Right.
They have not let them do that. Texas definitely has a tendency for letting people do that. They knew Texas Tech was going to try and do that, and it still happened. So we'll see how that defense fares against Oklahoma in a couple weeks. But 70-point showing here on offense is really solid. I talked a lot about how I'm not picking Oklahoma State until they get back and get healthy. They had Tay Martin back out wide, and it made a huge impact. Spencer Sanders looked better. Jaylen Warren continued to do well on the ground. The defense continued to play well, held down K-State in a really positive way. Deuce Vaughn held to like 22 yards. K-State's got like 8 quarterbacks now. I don't even know who's starting at this point.
Will Howard wasn't the answer. Got hurt. Kept popping in and out. They brought in the third string. Deuce Vaughn couldn't get anything going. A lot of drops for K-State. A lot, not like real ugly.
Yeah.
A lot needs to be cleaned up. But yeah, you're right. Good for Oklahoma State.
Over in Big Ten territory, Dan, Michigan State wins 23-20 over Nebraska in overtime. We had Michigan winning by 7 over Rutgers, 20-13, in a game that was way closer than it should have been.
Mm-hmm.
We had Iowa, who struggled for a good chunk of this game against Colorado State, of all teams.
Mm-hmm.
We had Penn State beating up on Villanova, but not dominating the way they should have. We had Ohio State with a freshman quarterback in Kyle McCord as they let C.J. Stroud, quote, rest his shoulder, which is weird phrasing.
Yep.
Maryland wins. Indiana wins barely on the road at Western Kentucky. Northwestern wins. Purdue in a terrible, unwatchable game beats Illinois 13-9. And then there was the Bowling Green Minnesota thing where Minnesota was favored by about 31 points and they lost 14-10. With just a ton of mistakes and getting stuffed on fourth downs and fumbles and penalties, and Tanner Morgan threw for like 59 yards. So where do you want to start? What jumped out at you in Big Ten play?
Not terribly worried about Iowa. That was a shanked punt and an interception for 2 short fields that Colorado State took over with and then did literally nothing else on offense. Penn State was good, right? Penn State was pretty good.
They were fine. They did not look as dominant as they should have. One thing that I am really focused on right now is how Sean Clifford looks, because to me, it feels like it's a new Cliff. Feels like it's a new Cliff this year with Mike Yurcich. He threw for 400 yards and 4 touchdowns. It's just he's kind of got a different vibe to him, and he's definitely, he always talks about how he's so confident. He's actually starting to play confident now, which I think is worrisome for other teams in the Big Ten. He looks good.
Yeah, I'm a little bit worried about that rushing attack, though, in the offensive line in terms of run blocking. And we saw a little bit of that against Auburn, and they've got an amazing duo out wide in Jahan Dotson and Parker Washington. I worry about, against some of the better defenses they're going to face on this schedule, that if you can't control clock a little bit, if you can't move the chains on the ground a little bit, it could get dicey and lose a winnable game.
I think it's going to be John Lovett, the transfer up from Baylor. I think he's going to be the primary by the time we get to the end of the season. I don't understand how they use running backs. I'm waiting for the number one guy to emerge, but they've got four running backs who could play. Noah Cain's been the name, but Noah Cain doesn't have burst. I know you like him. He doesn't have burst.
I don't care about burst as much as turning three into eight. That's all I care about from a running back at a certain point. If you can't run the ball, who's the guy that can take it from 2 yards to six?
Yeah,
that's
I think Lovett might be the guy, but he's kind of gotten off to a slow start here and didn't play early on. So we'll see more on that front.
The degree of difficulty of Michigan State exclusively, going three and out in the second half and winning a game against at least a decent Nebraska team.
Yeah.
There's nothing special about Nebraska big picture overall. This is a good defense with a playmaker at quarterback. The degree of difficulty with Michigan State fully collapsing on offense in the second half and winning this game is astounding. I don't know how to better describe it. It is the clunkiest clunker to be won from week four, as far as I'm concerned. And they did it. They somehow pulled it
out.
They did. And Nebraska, I mean, injuries at receiver, like just issues along the offensive line. AJ Martinez made plays, but obviously mistakes, a big one. I can't believe Michigan State was able to pull out that win. It's unreal. I don't know if you have anything to add. Minnesota's broken.
Minnesota is broke. I thought Nebraska had them.
Yeah, so did I.
They had them. Their defense is good. And Michigan State was held to 1 of 10 on third downs through the course of this game. As you said, Sparty had five possessions in the second half and all were three and outs. By my math, they gained 14 yards after halftime. So if not for a big special teams play from Jalen Reed, I don't know if they win this game. I don't know if they win this game. I will say there were two opportunities for a front door cover in overtime, because by the time this game kicked off, it was Michigan State -4.5. So this is one of my other locks, right?
Mm-hmm.
The first was on an interception in overtime. So Adrian Martinez throws to his right, ball's picked off, guy goes scoot down the field, makes it all the way down to the other side. It looks like he's going to get in. An offensive lineman just lays out and kind of knocks his leg out from behind him, and he goes down. Then in overtime, maybe the first or second play in OT, Kenny Walker, Kenny Dubs, my boy, goes scampering down for like a 23-yard run, just goes down 1 yard shy of the goal line. They tried a couple times to punch it in, but no bueno on that front. They end up kicking it to win 23-20 in overtime. But look, Michigan State's 4-0. You know, was a clunker. There's definitely a clunker feel to it. But 4-0, they are at least good enough to challenge pretty much anybody else in the Big Ten East at this point. Maybe all the Big Ten West, certainly most of the Big Ten East, because they seem to play pretty good defense. They're not doing too much offensively.
You think they can challenge everybody in the Big Ten East? Contributing one, literally one first down was too many in the second half. And they're hanging with, I mean, I understand the Michigan thing. I think Michigan's overrated at the moment. But Ohio State and Penn State seem like they could score 24 to 28 points against a Michigan State team who may struggle to do so against those squads. I don't know.
In a weird year where it feels like good enough is going to have to be good enough.
It was a letdown moment for sure.
I'm not as down on Michigan State as you are.
Okay, I'm not down on them. I think they're pretty good. I'm just, that kind of performance worries me. It worries me. Marcy Playground team of the Big Ten, your Maryland Terrapins, just hanging around. 4-0.
Yeah.
Schedule gets very real moving forward. Iowa, five of their next seven. They have Iowa Friday. Five of their next seven are against ranked teams.
Yeah, yeah.
So it gets trickier, but they're in position to be a bowl team, which is wonderful.
Maryland beat Kent State 37-16. Let's talk about Michigan. Michigan beats Rutgers 20-13. A lot's been made of the start that the Wolverines have gotten off to, not necessarily against great teams, but not cream puffs either. The ground game's been dynamic. I don't know how else you put it. I locked up Michigan here. I thought they were going to run all over Rutgers, but clearly that was not the case because Rutgers came to play, man. They went to overtime with Michigan a year ago. Rutgers contained that rushing attack. They allowed 109 yards on the ground between Blake Corum and Hassan Haskins.
Mm-hmm.
Shut out Michigan in the second half, gave themselves an opportunity to tie it up. They couldn't deliver on that, but definitely asking some new questions of Michigan that the previous three opponents had not.
One of those questions is, will Michigan continue to run it straight at us when we put eight guys in the box? The answer was an emphatic yes. The answer for Michigan was like, but we could keep running it straight at Rutgers as they increase the number of humans trying to stop the run near the line of scrimmage. Michigan's offense, I mean, I talked about being down on it, even though they were running all over eventually Washington and they ran all over Western Michigan. Like, this is not an especially interesting offense in terms of giving itself options if something's not working. Like the RPO game, the screen game, you know, the play action game, like there's not a lot there from Michigan. And when they were forced to do something new in the second half, they didn't. They scored 0 points and hung on against Rutgers. Was it a look-ahead spot against Wisconsin? I suppose. But 0 points in the second half against a team bearing down on you? That seems worrisome.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm kind of down on Michigan in terms of winning something significant this year.
Michigan on the road at Wisconsin next week, which will be an interesting matchup. Before we move on, real quick, on the Ohio State front, they roll over Akron, but Kyle McCord got his first start. 13 of 18, 319, two touchdowns, one pick. The more notable moment in this game was, I believe, Kevon Pope quitting during the game.
Weird situation, yeah.
Their linebacker
starting to run out onto the field, told to come back, got into an argument with, I think it was Al Washington, the assistant coach, one of the assistants for Ohio State's defense, and threw his gloves and jersey into the crowd, escorted into the locker room, tweeted out F Ohio State.
Yeah.
It was not a great scene behind the scenes for the Ohio State defense. Well, just specifically Pope. So, yeah. Good for Kyle McCord coming through against an extremely down Akron team. And I still think Ohio State's in a pretty good place because you look at the offenses that they're going to face. I'm not sure who's taking advantage of the Kerry Coombs defense, but probably someone will.
All right. Over in the SEC, we had Alabama win 63-14 over Southern Miss. We had Georgia roll. My God, they killed Vandy 62-0, scored 35 points in the first quarter in that game. Elsewhere, though, in the SEC, you know, a kind of a mishmash of different feelings and emotions. LSU wins 28-25 over Mississippi State. Auburn wins by 10 in a game where they struggled, 34-24 over Georgia State. Kentucky 16-10 over South Carolina, and Florida 38-14 over Tennessee. They did trail early in the second quarter, the Gators did, but then they clamped down and pretty much shut out Tennessee for the last 41 minutes of the game. Emory Jones looked good. It seemed like Florida really got its act together in the second half. What stood out to you in the SEC?
Bo Nix getting benched against Georgia State.
Man.
I have never really been a big Auburn offense under Bo Nix guy. And, you know, some of the bigger wins, I felt like they won. I mean, he made plays in some of those games, but it really came to roost. I mean, this is not a guy, Brian Harsin, who recruited Bo Nix. I thought the offense between the line, between Nix, between the lack of receivers, like, it is such a work in progress. It has been torn down to the studs. And so I guess you might as well look to TJ Finley for a spark. He wasn't amazing, but I guess they played with a little more life under TJ Finley. That was something, you know, Georgia's a war machine right now. Alabama looked terrific. Kentucky leaned on Chris Rodriguez, though he has his own issues.
Will
with the ball on the ground.
Levis is back, baby.
To being.
He's back.
Penn State Will Levis?
Is Penn that State what, Will Levis know. Is back. Yeah. He's
so,
back.
So nice win against South Carolina. I guess anytime you can win on the road, sure, within the division. But yeah, Kentucky's going to be defense and hopefully protecting the ball a little bit better for their wins this year. Florida, Tennessee, I came away very impressed with Florida and the ability for Dan Mullen to shape-shift this offense. You know, last year it's so much through the air, considering Kyle Pitts, considering those receivers. And I thought Emory Jones, from just a dual threat ability standpoint, I mean, the rushing attack was, again, in full gear with all those backs. And I thought he looked sharp throwing the ball, and they weathered. It was a long touchdown from a screen and a long touchdown pass from Tennessee and Hendon Hooker, but then he's beat up, and they look rattled against the crowd in the swamp. So really nice win for Florida to separate themselves from a rival.
And it seems like Emory Jones is getting more comfortable, too.
Totally.
Which you have to feel good about. Anthony Richardson did not play. He was still nursing the hamstring. Right. It sounds like he's going to be fully cleared for practice as of tomorrow, and he'll resume whatever role.
Kair Elam, I think, as well.
Their cornerback, right.
Yeah,
that will be helpful to get both those guys back. In whatever capacity they opt to use Richardson, there's no doubt he's a weapon that they can use. We didn't mention LSU Mississippi State all that much, but LSU led 21-3 in the third quarter and then 28-10 early in the fourth. Mississippi State made a late charge behind two touchdown passes from Will Rogers and then a two-point conversion to get this one to 28-25. They went for the onside kick, didn't get it. Right. Four touchdowns and a pick for Max Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
I clocked the speed of that interception. He threw it at maybe 18 and a half miles per hour.
Yeah.
That was the slowest ball I've seen since Bryant Moniz played at Hawaii.
There is a bit of a junk baller quality to Max Johnson's throwing, and he makes it work for him largely. He makes it work for himself largely.
A lot
largely,
of off-speed stuff, Dan. A lot of circle changeups coming in.
LSU has offensive line issues. They have issues running the ball. Defensively, they're in a pretty good place, but gave up some decent chunky plays. But Mississippi State, just, I mean, making the mistakes at the end of drives that they did, just unable to finish. Man. They are a team that is very much a work in progress offensively.
All right, let's scoot over to the ACC, Dan.
Let's.
What is going on in the ACC? My God.
I don't know, but I love it.
ACC, okay, here we go. Georgia Tech 45, North Carolina 22. Wake Forest 37-17 over Virginia. Don't look now. Wake Forest, undefeated. 4-0.
What are we called? We are Wake Watchers?
We are Wake Watchers, officially.
8-0 Wake, is that, that's the number, 8-0?
Yeah. Okay. Boston College 41, Mizzou 34 in overtime. Louisville knocks off Florida State. Florida State now 0-4. Yeah. We had Syracuse over Liberty with a nice win for Dino Babers, 24-21. Pitt by 70 over New Hampshire. Virginia Tech by 11 over Richmond, and Miami by 69. Nice. Over Central Connecticut. Romello Brinson, by the way, of Miami. I don't know if you saw his catch.
Didn't.
That might be the catch of the year at college football. One of those deals where he was running and it was thrown back shoulder by Jake Garcia, who got the start, or who played, I should say.
Yeah, I think Van Dyke got the start. But
right,
yeah, they
played for Miami and just kind of reached back behind it and caught it one-handed. It was an incredible catch if you haven't had a chance to see the highlights. And finally, Duke 52, Kansas 33, Dan. Graham Holmberg, 328, one touchdown, one interception, 88 yards on the ground, and four touchdowns for the Duke Blue Devils.
Impressed with BC, winning with a backup quarterback, winning on the ground. They completely suffocated Mizzou in the third quarter, but then a nice comeback from Mizzou. But again, a nice win for Boston College, who BC hasn't lost, right?
Nope.
4-0, despite losing the jerky boy, Phil Dracovic. Georgia Tech over North Carolina.
Oh, man. We need to talk
Jeff
about
Sims
this.
So Jeff Sims gets benched.
We need to talk about this.
Benched. Jordan Yates struggles early. Jeff Sims is back with his legs, with his arm. And North Carolina swallowed up by Georgia Tech's defense. Sam Howell with the fumbles and the sacks and no running game. The offensive line is a mess. And Georgia Tech, like, losing to Northern Illinois, then nearly beating Clemson and beating North Carolina is such a, like, a great rocky road.
Oh my
for the
God.
Ramblin' Wreck. I love it.
What a performance by the defensive line. And, you know, partially that is because of UNC and some of their issues up front. Okay. Mm-hmm. But 13 tackles for loss, 8 sacks of Sam Howell, the 2 fumbles, which you mentioned before. That was clearly the story that set the tone for this football games. And Jeff Sims, man, I'll call it out again. He had been on the shelf for a couple weeks, got hurt in week one. But when he stepped in late in the first half, and just went on a tear, like 10 of 13, 112 passing, a touchdown through the air, 128 and 3 touchdowns on the ground. Remember, this is the guy. This is a guy that they tried to go with initially before he got hurt. And so to come in now and play the way that he did, a big spot against North Carolina is a pretty big deal for them. So good on Georgia Tech for getting this win and for Jeff Collins for getting off the schneid, because he had not beaten a ranked team since taking the job. North Carolina, by the way, is 2-2, and they only have like 2 gimmies left, in my view. They play Duke, they play Wofford. But outside of those 2 teams, man, I don't know. I'm not feeling great about where this team is going in 2021.
You ever go to a water park, Ty?
I have.
Have you ever been to a water park? You know that every water park has that huge, huge drop slide?
Sure.
Where
sure.
It seems fun, and maybe I'm just speaking for myself here. Then you get to the top and you're like, well, this is a lot scarier and higher than I thought it was going to be. I think that's what North Carolina's quarterback of the future, Drake May, might be thinking right now, looking at the offensive line play. We're like, I didn't anticipate this when I committed to North Carolina. I know he's North Carolina legacy, but like, you have to be looking at the results here, that if you're an excellent quarterback like Sam Howell usually is, and he's struggling to get this offense going because of the struggles up front, it's a long-term worrying prospect for North Carolina, because those types of things don't get solved overnight.
And he can't even transfer over to Clemson anymore. That line is semi-permeable.
I don't know where you're going if you are a promising ACC quarterback right now. Like, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. Like, who has the most promising future offensive line that just is a quarterback away? I don't know.
Wake wins by 20 over Virginia. This was an earlier game this week. Virginia's defense, very secretly, kind of a disaster.
No secret, Ty.
Yeah, 699 total yards allowed last week against North Carolina, the aforementioned Tar Heels.
Mm-hmm.
473 allowed this week, but Brennan Armstrong still.
Yeah.
He's getting the Nick Foles Award. He had 407, 2 touchdowns and a pick in a losing effort. And just real quick, Dan, I have to believe Mike Norvell's on the hot seat.
I would think so.
I have to believe he's on the hot seat. FSU 0-4. Only 2 of their remaining 8 games are obvious wins, with, I think, Syracuse. I'll count Syracuse and UMass in a couple weeks. At one point, they trailed 31-7 in the second quarter. Malik Cunningham just carved him up. Mm-hmm. So we can talk about Louisville another day, how they're 3-1. Maybe being overlooked, I don't know. But Florida State does not seem like it's in a really good place. Whenever you're down 31-7 that early in the game, I start worrying that the team has quit on the coach. And if they're quitting on Norvell, it's over. It's done. Just get it over with.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they run the hell out of the ball with Chayshon Corbin. Like, that element of their offense, just that their defense and their passing game. And I thought it was the Kansas receiver who came in. Andrew Parchment, I believe, is his name.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought he was going to add a really nice just factor to this offense, as I try to not say the word element too much. But yeah, there's something just off, that they're not only not turning a corner, but they're nowhere near the corner on offense. When you come out this flat week in and week out, it's a preparation thing. It's a ready to play. It's a game planning. It's an anticipation thing that Florida State just doesn't seem to have. Also, not a secret that Virginia's defense is terrible. They're my maitre d' team of the 2021 college football season. Right this way. Ah, yes. See, I have a soundboard too.
That's
now.
Good. That's good.
Yeah. So that's no secret. I want to mention Syracuse real quick. Great defense. They ran the ball. They survived. The Carrier Dome's a tough place to play. Really cool for Syracuse, who now moved to 3-1. Malik Willis is going to be one of the absolute better quarterbacks they play. And so to get that win, really nice for them. Otherwise, I don't think I have much to add.
Well, and by the way, Willis played pretty well. He had a good game, but Syracuse just got it done, mostly on the ground. They finally went with Garrett Schrader at quarterback exclusively. Wasn't great throwing 6 of 15, 77 yards, but again, it was on the ground where they made their hay. Sean Tucker had a nice day, 169, yeah, a touchdown. And Garrett Schrader, 16 attempts on the ground, 53 yards and two touchdowns, the transfer up from Mississippi State. So good on Syracuse. This is a big win. Yeah. One of those games that I think we talked about before the start of the year as, you know, Liberty could take them down. It's possible here, and Syracuse, sure, gets the job done. So good on, yep, them. All right, finally, let's go to the Pac-12, Dan. So, yes, per the great college football Reddit community, underdogs in the Pac-12 at night, so-called Pac-12 after dark, are 16-2 against the point spread so far this year.
It's pretty good.
Could make a lot
pretty
of money.
Pretty good. Yeah.
A lot of money just going on dogs, which you have been trying to proclaim and scream from the top of your lungs all year.
Mm-hmm.
It worked out for you last week, for sure. Here's what happened in the Pac-12.
Okay.
UCLA, 35, Stanford, 24. We had Oregon winning 41-19 over Arizona. Oregon State knocks off USC 45-27. Utah comes from behind to knock off Washington State by a 24-13 score. Washington needs overtime to knock off Cal 31-24, and Arizona State took it to Colorado by a 35-13 score.
Yeah.
Oregon led just 24-19 in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
What the hell was that about? Arizona's not good.
And not only is Arizona not good, they had lost, I think, 14 or 15 in a row coming into this game. Oregon came out really impressively. They throw a long touchdown pass, Anthony Brown to Jalen Redd. They quickly pick off Jordan McLeod, the USF transfer, and turn that into 3 points. It was not a great red zone situation, but whatever. You turned it into points, that's fine. You turn turnover into points, it's always good. And then the offense just kind of disappeared. The defense couldn't get off the field. Oregon's particularly thin at linebacker right now. There were penalties in bad spots. Noah Sewell had a roughing the passer penalty on third and long, which bailed out Arizona, which I didn't actually think it was a penalty, but whatever. It was called, and so therefore it is. And just going downfield, Anthony Brown looked beat up. The offensive line struggled at times for Oregon. And Oregon's another one of those teams I think is good. I think they're a good team. I just don't think they're a great team. They're number 3 or 4 right now as we're recording this. They're not a top 5 team in the country to me. They're thin on defense, and you know, they got turnovers in the second half. They had a pick six that made the score look a little bit different than what the tenor of the game was.
Right.
And one of those drives, I think, was all on the ground for a touchdown, like 2 or 3 long running plays for Oregon. So, yeah, to not separate yourself from a team that has struggled to the extent that Arizona has struggled, it's a little bit concerning. Oregon gets up for the big games, but they have this tendency under Mario Cristobal to play down to those clearly lesser opponents. And if Arizona gets some dudes in that program, I think they're well coached. Don Brown's running the defense. I think Jed Fish will do a good job with that offense. They kept drives moving on, you know, third and medium. They did good situational things. They just don't have the guys right now. Oregon escapes with a 22-point win, or whatever the math ends up with. 41-19? 22. There you go. So,
would you be open to calling Oregon the Eugene Mudhens?
I guess. I don't know. Because they play up to, I mean, they show up to their huge games, so I don't know how we evaluate this team. But DTR, beat up, wills UCLA to a win after Stanford ties it up. I don't know what his health status is at the moment. Zach Charbonnet ran wild. The defense came to play against Stanford.
Yeah, yeah.
Stanford was without a ton of guys, but UCLA on the road, on the farm, a really impressive win. Oregon State is Chance Nolan one of the best 3 quarterbacks in the conference? He's really impressive in this offense.
He's really impressive. We were joking around this morning that it's pretty much Drake London versus the world at this point.
Yeah.
That maybe he is playing to try and be traded for future consideration.
Yeah, USC needs to
like
get
that.
Some value for him, because this team isn't going anywhere this year. Oregon State's just, I mean, Jonathan Smith has done a really nice job filling that roster up with guys, not necessarily dudes, but guys who can win Pac-12 games. And we now have competitive records against Michigan, Oregon State beating USC, Arkansas beating Texas A&M and Texas. Like, there's this like a nice undercurrent, a nice sea change happening from where these teams were a few years ago. So Oregon State, even with some bad refereeing, which went against them, impressive win to go to LA and beat a definitely flawed USC team. Washington turns over Cal, I think, three times, and they're able to escape with a win after going up comfortably in that game. But at least they're scoring points. But that game gets taken to overtime. Cal had some success through the air. Their defense just isn't where it was. I think you mentioned ASU-Colorado, comfortable win for ASU. Colorado's just a broken team. Washington State blows a lead.
Oh, man.
First half positivity in the second half.
Jared Garantano got the call with three picks. Hello, old friend. Welcome back to college football. Utah needed, 14 points in the fourth quarter to come from behind and win at home over Wazoo.
If you remember those old Michigan State teams who would look good for three quarters and be like, that's it, that's all we have. There's a little bit of that with Wazoo on a worse level.
Oh, okay. Elsewhere, we had Fresno closer than it should have been against UNLV.
Yeah.
UNLV's
letdown spot.
Not great, but 38-30, they get the dub. Coastal rolls over UMass 53-3. I feel like UMass plays every team. All the big teams get UMass.
Yeah.
BYU 35-27 over USF. They remain unbeaten as well. Any other games that you want to throw out there?
I have the Pat League scoreboard if that interests you. Columbia beat down Georgetown. Not beat them down, but 35-24. Colgate did beat down your Engineers of Lehigh 30-3. Holy Cross 45-15. Crusaders 3-1. 3-0 away from home. Take down Monmouth by 30. Lafayette takes down Penn. What's up, Quakers?
What's up, Quakers?
What's up?
What's up?
Fordham, comfortable win over Stony Brook. So there you go.
I was watching the Notre Dame game with Mama H, and she looked at the scoreboard. She says, does Lehigh ever win? I guess sometimes. I don't know.
Poor Lehigh. By the way, UTSA is my... I was messaging you about them. The Roadrunners, 4-0, wins over a Big Ten team, a win over Memphis. Schedule's looking real nice. Sincere McCormick, Jeff Traylor. I'm just saying, UTSA is going to win a whole bunch of games this year, I think.
We are all Roadrunners.
We are all Roadrunners.
We get a Roadrunners thing somewhere in the studio. Yeah, it was good. Okay. Let's go to our dude alerts. Who do we got?
I mentioned Sincere McCormick. Devin Carter, NC State, Emory Jones, Xavier Worthy, Tristan Ebner, just doing everything he possibly can to Will Baylor across the finish line. And I'm going to go with Traylon Burks here for Arkansas. And DTR, two guys who beat up, will their teams to victory. Quite impressive from those squads.
That does it. Week four officially in the books. A wild week. I think week five is going to be even wackier.
Yes.
There are a ton of high-level games. We don't have time to go through all of them right now, but we will on the Week 5 preview show. Mm-hmm. Again, if you are a Patreon subscriber, you get access to that show on Tuesday afternoon. You could find out more at verballers.com. Otherwise, you can go to solidverbal.com, read the great articles that we post on a weekly basis, three a week. You can also find all of our old stuff out there and figure out how to subscribe to our podcast via your app of choice. We're also doing a ton on YouTube right now, including our live streams on Saturday mornings. So they'll start 11 a.m. every Saturday morning. You can go to Eastern time. Thank you. SolidSaturday.com is where you can find out more info on how to tune into the live stream, but it's free for all. If you've got a smart TV, you can watch on your TV. If you want to see us, in bigger version, God help you, but it is there for you if you are interested in doing such things.
Nearly all of the hosts this week of Solid Saturday had their audio working.
Just about
Nearly all of them.
Nearly all of them.
I duffed it in a pretty major way, but I managed to come through with some AirPods in my phone. So we still had our fun Solid Saturday.
Absolutely. So check it all out. SolidVerbal.com is where you can go as a starting point. We will be back in just a few short days. Continue rolling along in this crazy college football season of 2021. For that guy over there, my name is Ty Hildenbrandt. His name is Dan Rubenstein. Thank you again so much for downloading, for listening, for supporting the show. We'll talk to you soon. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.